My name is Quill Taylor, and I have taken it upon myself to record my findings pertaining to the life of a young boy named Anthony Todd. This is Quill Taylor recording entry number 7, written on my 7th day in Moorgrove. Entry begins. When I walked up the gravel path toward the front door late this morning, I finally felt a swell of nervousness in my gut. The last time I'd been to the manor, I wasn't exactly welcomed, and while Anthony's nanny seemed a fine woman, I was still fairly anxious about speaking to her again. She'd wanted me to leave town, so my first thought was that she would be displeased to hear that I had decided to stay. Still, she was the one who asked me in the first place, so I was going to be honest. I knocked 3 times with the intricate metal knocker on the door, and after mere moments it swung open to reveal a tall man in a dark suit. I assumed it was the butler that Anthony had mentioned. He certainly fit the description I was given. His eyes scanned me coldly and asked for my name. I told him, and he nodded once, allowing me inside. The entryway is unsurprisingly intricate. The dark wood theme matched well with the stone exterior. A high ceiling with a rustic chandelier, a staircase branching up to a second floor that can be seen behind a wooden railing. There was a hallway stretching back beside the base of the stairs, and 2 large rooms to either side of the entryway. I was led to the right, through a sitting room and into another hallway, then through a set of open doors. This room was gorgeous. Bookshelves lined the 2 walls that didn't have floor-to-ceiling windows, and a long table stretched across the center of the room. In the center of the right wall, among bookshelves, there was a stone fireplace, crackling in the comfortable silence of the room. At the end of the table sat Abby, with a small pair of round glasses perched on her nose. She was delicately holding a black-covered book in one hand, and using a spoon to stir a cup of tea with the other. She tapped the spoon twice on the rim of her cup, and set it down on a cloth before lifting her eyes to meet mine. I felt a quick shock, realizing that I hadn't seen her eyes until now. They were cold, calculating, and seemed as if they could see straight through me. Yet, despite being chillingly prominent, her eyes matched her face well. I wish I could say I wasn't staring, but after an awkward moment, I realized I'd been standing in the doorway for a moment too long. She invited me to sit down after a brief greeting and closed the book, then gestured to a plate of sandwiches and finger foods on a flower-printed set on the table. She seemed calmer, more comfortable than the previous times we'd interacted. Her hair seemed a bit less tightly drawn back, and a few strands even hung at the sides of her face. As she put her glasses down on top of the book and turned her attention back to me, her small smile was one I hadn't seen before. I almost felt bad to tell her I wasn't leaving. She was disappointed, that much was obvious. I discovered quickly that while her emotions tended to lean towards a more mellow range, she isn't the best at masking those emotions. I tried to convince myself that she had a good reason to want me to leave, and it wasn't necessarily personal, while continuing the conversation by asking how I could help with her research. Abby nodded shortly and launched into a quick rundown of what she'd been working on. Most of it was what she'd mentioned before, the people in town, the lack of modern technology, and not being able to leave the town. She seemed to think all 3 of these things weren't very important. She'd been much more focused on a couple of other things, mainly the library. She brought it up a few times, asking me if I'd returned the books yet. I politely informed her that I would be returning them after our meeting, and she seemed a bit displeased at my answer, but once again left the subject. She showed me a page in her notepad with neatly written bullet points, listing various places in town including the library, the shops, the town's clock tower, the park, and City Hall. She explained briefly that she'd observed strange occurrences in each of the places, and planned to investigate as soon as she'd gathered some information and contacts. I'd been audibly confused as to how she'd find contacts in a town where everyone seemed frankly uninclined to believe any of this, but with a bit of a smile, she told me that, though few, there are still people in town who are willing to help, myself being an example. As if on cue, someone else strode into the room and confidently took a seat beside Abby. Their smile was bright, and next to Abby's monochrome palette, they had much more color to their clothes and personality. They introduced themselves as Sasha, though they commented that they tended to use Essa on their more feminine days, and seemed a bit ignorant of the fact that they had just interrupted a conversation. I certainly didn't mind, however, and Abby's comfort level seemed to increase a bit more with them in the room. She clarified to me that Sasha was one of her aforementioned contacts. I'm not one to be calm around new people, but to my surprise, I felt better with Sasha there. They had an air of warmth and friendliness about them. I found myself enjoying the rest of the conversation, which was mainly making plans to meet up tomorrow. When it felt correct to leave, Abby seemed inclined to stay put in her chair, giving me a slight nod and a promise to talk again. Sasha, however, insisted on walking out with me. They'd apparently been at the manor for most of the morning, claiming that Azyander didn't know how to make anything less fancy than a four-course meal. It took me longer than it should have to realize they were talking about the butler I'd briefly met earlier. I hesitantly asked them if they'd known those living in the manor for long, and they were happy to tell me that they'd known the Todds since Anthony had been born. They said the Todds so easily that it suddenly occurred to me that I hadn't known Anthony's last name, much less that Abby and the butler, Azyander, seemed to share it. Sasha rambled until we got outside, rounding the path and heading in the direction of town. After a couple of minutes of walking, they stopped, bidding me goodbye. I asked if they lived around here, and they pointed to a small path leading into the forest and told me it led to their house. Despite my curiosity, I figured it'd be rude to follow them, so I told them it'd be nice to make their acquaintance, and I hoped we'd get to know each other better. They gave me a wide smile and headed off, and I walked back into town. I've stopped at the cafe for a coffee before I go to the library to return the books. I finished The Fantastical Adventures last night, and while History of Morgrove has been somewhat useful for giving me something to do these past few days, I don't think it will be too helpful with writing as it's rather outdated. I suppose I have something else to occupy my time now. Entry ends. I've spent more time in the past week at the manor than in my flat or anywhere else. I think Anthony enjoys me being here, and Ez has someone to cook for. Essa, occasionally Sasha, also mentioned that having another person around has made the vast building seem a bit more like a home. I'm glad I can do that. But I suppose recently things have been a bit tense. Abby hasn't spoken to me about what happened, and honestly, I think it's kind of petty. There's no reason for her to be so angry over a simple tape recorder. I just wish she'd talk to me about this.
Hello, are you busy?
Hey, Essa. I'm actually just finishing up. Do you need something?
I just came to see how you're holding up. Are you alright?
My ankle's fine. It's just a sprain. I should be walking normally again in a couple of days.
Quill... Okay, well, I'm glad your ankle is doing better. But I was talking about Abby.
What about her?
You two have been avoiding each other ever since... Well, you know. And I just want to know if everything's all right.
It's fine. She's just keeping things from me again, and it's been concerning on my end, is all.
Oh. Should I talk to her about it? She's never been hesitant to tell me things.
And I'm sure she's told you about the tapes.
What about them?
How they don't work around her? How whenever she's near this device, the tape is just overrun by static?
I did not know that, no. You're sure it's just around her?
Positive. Both tapes I listened back to were distorted when she was in them. I don't know what it means, but I don't trust it.
Well, Abby's mentioned to me before that she doesn't get along with modern technology in general. I think it's hilarious that Anthony is so savvy with it.
Yeah, hilarious.
Anyway, she's probably aware of it, and, well, what with the things you've both been looking into, I'm not surprised that she'd want to keep it a secret.
What do you mean?
She was probably worried that you'd overreact and think she's some, I don't know, supernatural entity or something. And, I mean, look at you. You're suspicious of her already, and all because of two distorted tapes. It's not uncommon around here for new tech to do strange things.
I guess not. Doesn't have to mean anything.
Exactly. I'm making sandwiches and lemonade. Why don't you come out into the courtyard when you're finished here?
Sure, I'll, Wait. Are you going to try and get Abby and I to talk? Because it won't work,
great.
I don't-
See you in a few. Don't take too long.
I suppose I should go out. No point in putting it off. It's a nice day. I don't really have anything left to comment anyway. Plus, I should go apologize.
The Domestic Life of Anthony Todd is a podcast written and recorded by J.R. Steele and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 4.0 International License. The audio is edited using Audacity, the free editing program. Thanks for joining me.